Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. All the Bits is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network and is sponsored by Board Game Bliss, a store where you can find amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Sean and Michelle.
Hello, everyone. And welcome to episode 41.
In this episode's bits, we'll talk about Trek in the National Parks, Tiny Towns, Nemo's War, Selenia, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, a gemstone mining game, and On Tour. We'll discuss the BGG thread, what did board games teach you about yourself? Well, we're going to get super zen this episode. And get up to our usual antics of asking pointless questions, guessing games, and drooling over bits.
Yeah, baby. Do you know, I haven't sang my Bits song in a while.
You haven't? We haven't done it all. Feel free to sing it now while I wake the...
Bits.
And I'm wiping the drool from my sides of my mouth in a really classy fashion.
Lovely. Yeah. With your sweater sleeve?
No, I'm wearing a t-shirt. But
what?
Just with my arm hair.
Did you know that this time last year, Sean, my daughter was outside in shorts, and today... she had snow boots?
Yes, because we live in a friggin' frozen tundra. It's
frozen.
We are recording this on May 5th, and It snowed yesterday, and there's snow everywhere, and it's just, my gosh.
It won't go away. Winter's coming. Canada is very into Game of Thrones right now.
Yes, the Night Walker, King Watch, whatever his name is like stalking around.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
We need Jon Snow to save us.
I could handle that.
Yeah, I'm sure you could.
I would be totally okay with that.
I'm sure you would.
Speaking of kind of superhero-esque things.
We're going to talk about Avengers Endgame.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
I actually went and saw that movie.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was I wanted to take my mom for her birthday to the VIP, and it was the only one playing, and so I was like, well, I guess I'm going to see it.
Did your mom want to see it?
Or? She's pretty, she'll watch anything.
Oh.
She likes action, so I figured.
And so, did you love it?
Yeah, it was fine. It was a little bit funny, like cliche funny, but yeah, it was good. It's fine.
You're just, really, I just, you just get off the internet.
Okay.
It's like the greatest movie of all time, you know.
Yeah, is that people like it?
No, I don't know if they like it that much, but I've seen it twice already. I just love it.
Really?
Yeah,
it's so long. Oh,
I'm gonna see it again this week.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yep.
All right. Well, my ask me anything question.
Yeah.
Is related to superheroes.
Okay.
Because
sweet.
Why not?
Sure.
So, Sean.
Yes.
If you could play a game with any superhero...
Green Lantern.
Who would it be and why?
I have thought that far too quickly. I have thought about this a lot. It would be a game based on Green Lantern's power ring and an engine builder. Michelle, do you know what Green Lantern does?
He lights lanterns.
Kind of, to repower, yes. But anyway, listen, you shouldn't have got that right. But no, so he's got a power ring that creates constructs that he thinks of, and it creates them. So I would like a game where you're Green Lantern, you're almost his ring, and you have to build an engine to create these magnificent constructs and get them going to build more and more elaborate constructs to defeat the bad guy.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I have thought about
this. For you.
No, this would be an amazing game. I have DC and... whoever has the DC license, which I think is like Cryptozoic, they should hire me to make this game, basically, is what they should do.
Yeah, well, clearly. And as long as it has some superhero crap on it, anyone will buy it.
That is true.
Not anyone, but a lot of people.
But
I would not know. Is Green Lantern in that deck building game you like? Marvel deck building or whatever?
No, that's DC deck building.
DC
deck building. You literally, Michelle, just saw Avengers Endgame was Green Lantern in it.
No.
Well, then there's your answer.
Okay.
You know.
And everyone was in it, so.
Yeah, that's right, right? So if Green Lantern's not in there, Batman's not in it, you know it's not DC.
Okay.
But yes, he is in DC Deck Builder. There's also the Green Lantern versus Sinestro two-player pack thing that I have as well that he's in.
That you sleep with every night?
I sleep in Green Lantern pajamas, that is correct.
Oh, good.
Yes, just FYI.
Wonderful. I have a Yoshi hanging from my car, so I can't really
do too much. Yeah, that is true. All right. I honestly don't think I can top that question. I think I should just retire.
I think that just might work.
Yeah, a question about Green Lantern. All right. So, Michelle.
Yeah.
At your advanced age, you're very clearly a child of the 80s.
Right? I don't like this question.
Okay, no, that I was just trying to be. No, I'm not making an age joke. No, but like...
But yes, I am a child
in the
of
80s, mixtapes were a big thing, right?
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. So, if you could create your ultimate board gaming mixtape, because you're also a big music person, your board gaming mixtape, give me three songs that would be on that mixtape.
It depends what game I'm playing.
Or classical compositions that'll work too. Three songs
for a board game mixtape. Big Butts, and then I would say, instead of Butts, I'd say Bits. I like big bits and I cannot lie. And I also like annoying the people around me, yes. So that would be very effective
on
both fronts.
You would be awesome at that.
What else? What's one of my, Grand Austria Hotel, what's a good thing that would go, there's no good songs for that. Maybe some elevator music.
Hotel California, but not really.
There you go. Maybe some elevator music for, like, I'd find my beige-ish, driest Euro I could find and just, like, play elevator music.
It's funny because it's true. Everyone would just fall asleep. Just aid the falling asleep as they're playing your beige, boring Euros.
And then I want to play, like, I don't know, I'd say there's this sax quartet piece. It's a French sax quartet piece called Une Mécanique de Rêve, which I know that's my bad French accent, but it's like super loud. Like the second movement is about somebody dreaming about blood, and it's like very screechy. Oh. It's very modern. I think I would play that.
You're just trying to get any advantage you can while you're playing.
Yeah, just annoy people. Maybe the elevator music for Arkham, and then the screechy, loud tenor for a Euro. Just, like, mess with people's minds.
Oh, my goodness. Have you ever used music for, like, in a game?
I haven't, no. No.
Once we've used music, we did... We used the Aladdin soundtrack for Tales of Arabian Nights.
Nice.
It was the only time. It wasn't my idea, of course. So it's the only time, which was pretty cool. It was pretty cool as I was getting my sex change and stuff to have.
From the Fountain of Youth or whatever it is. That was, oh man. That was actually one of my, probably one of my most memorable gaming experiences was when my friend got a sex change in that game.
As it should be,
Yeah, that was good times. Good question. I guess some apps have the ambient music. Mm-hmm. I find it kind of distracting. I don't mind it like super quiet in the background, but.
I think it depends. Yeah, it depends the game. Like I've been over for, I don't actually have a TV, but I've been over for like game nights to places where there's like a TV on in the background or something. And I'm like, I'll be like just listening to the music or paying attention to what's going on to the TV because I'm very distractible. So yeah, I kind of agree with that.
You're distractible?
What? No, no one would have known.
No.
Is that a word? Distractible is a word, right?
I think so.
Okay, I'm not supposed to be saying I'm easily distracted. Well, speaking of asking you questions, Michelle.
Yes.
Do. I lose it at the end.
I was going to try to make that around, but it didn't work.
Yeah. I'll lose it at the end for our Guess the Game bit, where we give each other clues for games on BGG.
Yeah, baby. Can I go first?
Yes, you go first.
Okay.
Splendor.
No. Okay. This was published in 2006.
Whoa.
Yep. Okay. Current rating of 6.8 with 6,000 ratings.
Whoa.
Plays 3 to 5 in 60 minutes.
2006.
Okay. Yes, and has a weight of 2.29.
Bonanza?
No. Okay. Good guess, though. I think Bonanza's earlier.
Probably.
But I don't know for sure. I think so. All right. Some of the mechanisms.
No.
Area enclosure.
It's area enclosure nonsense again. Okay.
Auction bidding.
Okay.
Car drafting. Dice rolling. Hand management. Set collection. And tile placement.
7 wonders.
So it's basically a smorgasbord of like every mechanism out there.
Oh.
Category ancient.
Like me, okay.
What else could I tell you? The type is family strategy.
Do I know this game? Have I played it?
Yes, you know it and you've played it and you've talked about it on the podcast.
What?
Yep.
Manhattan? No, yeah. There's no card drafting.
No. I'll give you the publisher, which will probably give it away.
Okay.
Days of Wonder.
Well, it can't be that many games.
I know.
Not Tickets to Ride.
That was your big hit, man.
Card draft. Yamatai? No, that wouldn't be that long
ago. Oh, yeah.
Is it that game that is on Kickstarter now?
Yep.
Cleopatra.
Yes. Cleopatra and the Society of Architects.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Did you back that? Are you going to back that?
I did not back it. No, I have the original.
Yeah. It looks very pretty.
It does look very pretty.
It's also, it was like, I think I looked it up. It was like, what was it, like $150 or something? Like, they're all
it's
in.
It's like every Kickstarter now, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I think it's pretty expensive.
All right, you ready for yours?
Yep.
This is a gooder. You're going to get this pretty fast, though, I think.
Don't say stuff like that, then I never do. It's too much pressure. All
right, sorry. I mean, you're going to take forever to get this.
Wonderful.
All right. This is a, what can I even tell you? This is a 2005 game.
Okay.
It has 34,000 ratings. On BGG.
Okay.
With 7.7 thousand comments.
Thousand.
Thousand. Okay. It's got a weight of 3.57. All right, whatever.
Is it Power Grid?
No. It plays in 120 to 180 minutes. That seems optimistic. And is
Arkham Horror.
Is a two-player game.
Through the Ages.
Nope.
What?
It's a two-player
game. Yeah, it is. You're wrong.
What?
Oh, two-player only.
Two-player only. Published by GMT.
Oh, Twilight Struggle.
Yes. See, I told
you. That was 2005.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I told you would get it pretty fast.
Yeah.
Remember when we played, a round of that?
I was going to say. Yeah, I liked that game when I first got into the hobby, and I still appreciate it. It was just, it felt like a lot of work, you know?
Maybe I need to go back and play it one day, but I was unimpressed. Maybe it was because of, what everyone thinks of it, but it was, I think at that time, it was definitely still number one on BGG. Now it's
five? It was. I don't know, actually. It's definitely fallen down the ranks.
I think Pandemic Legacy and Gloomhaven and something else have bumped it, but
I've never seen that out or even mentioned at any conference at any or convention. I'm like, I know there's a different word, convention.
I feel like
at like game night. I mean, I like, I get it, it's only two player
game, though,
but
right? I think that's like
no in the it's not but
it's
you
an
think
appointment
you
game.
Think you'd still see it.
Yeah,
sorry, it's a what
I said. I feel like that's an appointment game. It's like, okay, we're gonna play this at this time on this day, as opposed to kind of like, well, Gloomhaven's like that too, right? Like Gloomhaven,
yes,
I've never seen Gloomhaven out at like a game night, or because also spoilers and stuff. But I think that's also more of an appointment game. And I think just because it takes so long and it only plays two players, it's like... But I hear you. I think the people who love it, love it.
Yeah, and I could see, like, if it was a game that I played a ton,
yeah,
I would get a lot of enjoyment out of it. But to play it every once in a while, it was just so much.
Do you have the app?
And,
or the game?
No, I don't, actually. Curious. Maybe I should get that.
Yeah, I'm curious about that, because if it takes care of all the kind of bookkeeping stuff and fiddliness of it all, you know, I wonder if I've heard really good things about it. I know a few people who will only play the app now.
Yeah, maybe I'll check that out, because I did like it. I probably don't like it as much as I used to, right? Because my tastes have changed, but yeah, I might check that out.
Cool. Pew, pew. This is our pew pew bit, where we talk about games that we've played.
And say pew pew.
A friend came over yesterday and he was wearing a shirt that said pew pew on it. And I was like, oh, are you wearing that for me? He's like, why would I be wearing that for you? And it was like a Star Wars shirt because yesterday was May 4th or some such thing.
Oh, yeah, right.
Like, I'm just going to pretend you wore that shirt for me. So.
That's awesome. We need pew pew shirts.
We do. We need to get our shirt. Maybe if any of our bitsers would like shirts, would like some, you know, merch, some All the Bits merch, let us know. We could get some made. You can embarrass yourselves in the street.
Like, all I see is, like, these, like, crafty handmade things.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Like, you just get, like, a white shirt and sew pew pew on it. Hey, that'll be way cooler than, like...
No, like, drawn.
Oh, even
with a
better.
With a Sharpie, let's be honest here.
We let our kids, you let your kid, I let mine just draw on it.
That's how we roll, baby.
Yeah. All right, so who's going first here?
Go ahead.
All right, I will go first. My first pew 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 is Trekking the National Parks, second edition. This is a game that recently came out from Kickstarter from Blink Inc. LLC and Underdog Games, design and art by Charlie Blink. It is a 2-5 player game that plays in about 30 to 60 minutes. And it is about, guess what?
Trekking the National Park.
Yeah.
Oh, I nailed it.
Oh, you're so smart. All right, so this is a game I recently played, and I thought I would talk about because it is a nice, light, quick-to-learn game. Think very much Ticket to Ride minus the, like, route cards of the, like, base Ticket to Ride, right? So you're doing a lot of set collection. You're trying to go across land in national parks, and you're trying to camp out at the parks. This is kind of what the theme is, and a lot of the guts of the game are very, very much what you would think in Ticket to Ride. And what you're doing is, at the beginning of the game, there's, like, national parks from all over the U.S. Sadly, they are hating on Canada, which...
Boo.
But I guess there's room for expansion content, but whatever.
There you go.
But it's
way to be an optimist. Way to be a Canadian.
I'm trying. Sorry. So you have all the... 30, 40, whatever national parks in the U.S., and at the beginning of the game, you have little stones on each national park. Every time you end your turn on one of the national parks, you get to take those stones. You can also get... You're also trying to get national park cards. So let's say if you go to the Grand Canyon, there'll be symbols on the Grand Canyon, and you have to use your cards, which are multi-use cards. You're using them to move around the board, as well as to get the national park card. So they'll have, let's say, it might have three symbols, like a mountain, a boat, and a boot, and you play those cards and you get that card, which has victory points on it. You can also go to one of three parks that are on the board for everyone to camp to, and you have these cute little camp tent meeple thingies. You go there, you play the cards associated with it, and you get a special power, like a special bonus, like move extra or draw cards, something like that, for there. And then kind of you play out the game until someone gets there are either no more stones on the board or someone gets five of the park cards. Game ends based on your points from park cards, camps, as well as Majori and the different color of stones. That's pretty much the game. It's nice fun. It's not a game you would bring out too often, but it is a game for those, I think, really for those people who, you know, you might be playing a game with someone, they're like, ooh, I've played Monopoly, or I've played whatever, when they talk about board games. Here's a game that actually, and I have experienced this with Ticket to Ride, where people kind of get, so Ticket to Ride is a little much for them. So if you get into those situations, this is a game that's a nice step up from any mass market game. But it's a little bit easier than something like Ticket to Ride, and quicker, too.
And the first player marker is a giant bear.
It's a giant bear. Not as big as the Raccoon Tycoon bear, but it's a bear. And you can pretend the bear is attacking your little camper meeples, which are also nice. The quality of the game is awesome. Like, all the park cards, if you notice, are actual snapshots of the parks. And they actually tell you what part of the park it is, and they give you a stat, like a... Hmm. A stat, there was one which had like 400 different types of bees, which has absolutely just frightened me. I was so scared after reading that. It was a Mensa Select nominated game or some such thing. And I could definitely, like we talk a little bit on the show sometimes with games that like would be good for education, could definitely see this being like a game you use to teach about, you know, the natural sciences, about nature, things like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a fun game. Definitely recommend checking it out if you're into something like that. Just keep in mind that it's very, very light.
1.67.
Yes, light. That's very, it's very light. That's Trek in the National Park, the second edition from Blink Inc. LLC.
Cool.
Cuckoo.
My first pew-pew is Tiny Town.
It's
so cute and little. Published really in 2019.
Really want to make a That's What She Said joke, but I won't, because we are a proud member of the Dice Tower Network.
But you just did. So.
I don't know what you're talking about, Michelle.
Okay. All right, well, Tiny Towns was published.
Just wait, do your whole pew-pew in that voice, please. Please.
Pew-pew. Tiny Towns in 2019 has a current rating of 7.6 on BGG with 235 ratings. It's fairly new. Mm-hmm. Plays 1-6. Has a weight of 1.67. Designed by Peter McPherson, and the artist is Gong Studios and Matt Paquette, and it's published
Gong.
By AEG. No, it's okay. I totally appreciate that you did that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It was necessary.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So, this game is also a very light game, and you have a grid. This is the secret behind all board game designs, is a grid.
It's the secret behind anything has any form of artistic need in it is use a grid.
Just, if you're going to design a game, start with a grid and go from there.
Yeah.
So in this game, you're trying to build the most prosperous town by getting the most points.
Mm-hmm.
And you build the town by putting different formations of cubes on your grid and building buildings. So there's a number of building cards in the middle of the table that have different scoring bonuses, you know, for example, if this one is in the corner, get 3 points, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they require a certain pattern of cubes. So, like, think of, like, a Tetris T, for example, and then it'll dictate what colors those should be. And once you have that on your board, you can take those cubes off, place one of those buildings on your board on any one of the spots that a cube was on, and call it a day. And so you keep playing until no one can play anymore. And then you add up all your points. You lose a point for every empty spot, which does happen. And that's basically the game. Every person has their own special monument that is unique to them. And the way you put cubes out on the board is there's actually two variants in the game. One way is that on each person's turn, they actually specify a color or a resource type, if you want to be thematic, and
horrible,
and then
people.
Everybody has to. Pardon me.
You horrible people in your
team. Yeah. Disgusting. Where was I?
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. That's okay. That's okay. Yeah. Right. So on your turn, you can say yellow or wheat. Or wheat. And then everybody has to put that color out. Or there's an actual deck that has the resources spaced out. So you just flip over a card. And then I think it's every three, you can, everybody gets to choose one of their own.
Mm-hmm.
You played that way, right?
Yes.
Okay. I've only played the other way. So anyways, so that's the game. It's really simple. It's really streamlined. And quite effective for what it is. It looks really pretty on the table. There's a bunch of, like each building is its own wooden shape.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very nice table presence, very easy, easy to learn, but it's not, the easiest to play in the sense of doing well, because as you build buildings, your play area is getting smaller and some shapes are not possible and you're not getting what you need. So there's some really interesting decisions there. It's still light, you know, so when I say really interesting, I'm not talking, you know, felled interesting, but for a game of this length, which is about 45 to 60 minutes, and weight, it's, you know, pretty decent decisions. And, yeah, I've enjoyed playing this game. It's hit the table a lot just because it is so quick and easy and streamlined. I know it's getting a lot of buzz. I feel like maybe that's a little bit overhyped. Mm. Like, I think it's a nice game. It's a fine game. And in terms of that space, you know, of that length and that weight, I think it is, you know, in the top tier. But I mean, it's not like I'm like, oh my god, this is incredible, but it's a very good game. And yeah, worth checking out if that sounds interesting. What did you think of your play of it?
I really liked it. It took me some time, because when I was doing this, when I was learning how to play the game, I was like, what? Like, I don't think I realized that it's basically just an abstract game, right? That you're really just trying to deal with how you could get the most bang out of your grid there. And I don't think I realized just how much of an abstract game, and very much a visual, like a spatial reasoning one, right? Which I just suck at so badly.
I do too.
My brain struggles, man. If I ever did a psychology assessment, oh my gosh.
And I could see this being frustrating, like for somebody, like if they really wasn't, like they didn't think at all.
Yeah.
And they just kind of did, you know, maybe a third through the game, maybe they would start to realize like, oh, I can't really do a whole lot. And that might get frustrating. But I feel like, I don't know, maybe that would happen closer to the end of the game. Like, maybe there's enough leniency there. But
I think there is, yeah. And I think the reason that it definitely seems like it's gotten, like, that, like, sweet spot of just tons of hype. Because it kind of came out of nowhere for me. I didn't really know about it. And then just before I blink, everyone seems to be talking about it. And I think part of that is when you think of its abstract nature, you know, comparing. I played this with Greg from Sentry Box, which is a friendly local game store, and he had mentioned very much comparisons to Reef, and I think like it really does fall into that, like Reef, Azul,
definitely
Sagrada, like,
yep,
space,
great production,
yeah, and bits. You know, the one thing about those four games, I guess, when you think of all of them that have in common, is that they're all basically abstract games that have a really nice sheen on them that make you feel like you're doing more than just a, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. just an mm-hmm. abstract game. And like, I feel like those games in general tend to get a lot more hype because there's so few of them. You know, like, I think people still talk about, well, Azul's just an amazing game, but in terms of like Reef and Sagrada and the new Azul, like, people just talk about them because there's not a ton in that market. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, there definitely seems to be a niche for it, and people really appreciate it. I think too, this game kind of takes you by surprise mm-hmm. a little bit, because you start out and you're like, okay, this is really simple, this is really basic, and then I think there's kind of a halfway point where you go, oh,
yeah,
you know, shoot, like, where, how am I going to be able to do this? And you know, suddenly the game is pushing back on you, whereas at the beginning it's really not. So mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit of a cool moment, I guess, halfway through the game, and maybe that hooks people a little bit because it's not what you expect.
Yeah, and yes, I am definitely looking forward to playing this again and playing it. So apparently I had like this one of the obelisks that, like, you don't have to, because normally, like you said, when you build your buildings, you have to put in a space with one of the cubes, one of your resources, but you don't with this obelisk. So when you build your obelisk, which is one of your hidden cards, you just get to put your buildings anywhere. And I feel like that seems super OP for this type of game, even though I still didn't win, because like I said, I suck at this type of game. But like I had that, so I didn't have to, my gears weren't constantly turning. Like, where am I going to put this? Or I just got to plop them down. Anywhere I wanted. Which seems really overpowered if you know what you're doing in this game. But
it could be.
I'm guessing some of the other cards are like that too, those hidden cards. But yeah, it was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I was like, ooh, I want to play this again.
Yeah, it felt meh, but it keeps coming back for me. So there's something there. For sure.
It's that nice space, right? Where it takes like, you know, 30, 45 minutes, maybe an hour if you're teaching to a bunch of new people, probably not, especially once you played it a few times. I'm sure you bang them out in like half hour, 45 minutes, if that. And that's
and there's a solo mode too, which is nice.
There you go. Yeah. And that's a really nice space that there's not a ton of games in there that have a little bit of meat on top of them as well. So
For sure. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, that's Tiny Towns.
Tiny Towns. All right. I'm going to do this. It's going to be a very quick pew pew. Just because this is something entirely new to me, is the world of solo gaming. As we've talked about on the show, I don't do a ton of solo gaming. But I recently had the opportunity to pick up a copy of Nemo's War from Victory Point Games, designed by Chris Taylor, and art by Ian O'Toole, who we've talked about on the show. And the art in this game is amazing. I love the art in this. This is, I guess it is a 1-4 player game, but I think people say generally stay away from anything not solo in it.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Yeah. So this is very much an adventure / exploration game where you're kind of in Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and you're kind of focusing on Captain Nemo and his ship, the Nautilus, that part of the story. And that's what got me interested in this game, is just the theme. I love the theme. Super interested in it. This game is just oozing with theme. I think at its heart, and I've played it 1.5 times now. I have it set up over there on another table here. So I'm kind of working my way to playing it again. I love it. I have loved it. It is not terribly deep. It is long. I think it is long for a game that really doesn't feel that deep. I think you're looking at 2 to 3 hours when you play it, although BGG says 60 to 120 minutes. It's basically just a dice chucker, really. Like, I think at its heart, you have kind of, you're using, it's very much an action point. You're using your action points to do your movements and do your different things that you're doing. But there's so much dice chucking in it, and you're just figuring out how you can mitigate your dice rolls to beat other ships or to kind of make other things. You have a crew, not so much a crew as captives, that you're sacrificing by throwing overboard to add to your dice and stuff. I have loved this game. It's so, like, every single card in the adventure deck has tons and tons of different text on it pertaining to the story. Depending what you choose as your kind of mission for each game, there are a few different things you can choose, like exploration, war, things like that. Depending what you choose, it changes the game. It seems like I'm on my second one now doing exploration, I think, or something along those lines. I have really enjoyed it. I never thought I would like a solo game that's not Terraforming Mars or Baseball Highlights 2045. And this is really a strict solo game, whereas those games are, you know, games that are already loved doing it, but I've really enjoyed it. I don't know how much staying power this game will have, so I'm looking forward to coming back after I finish this game, maybe play another game to talk about it. But I have really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've always been curious about this one.
Yeah.
And every time I hear it's just a dice chucker, I'm like, no.
Yeah, and I think you have to kind of be willing to kind of be immersed in the theme of it and it, because I don't think I realized it was a dice chucker when I got it. I was like, oh, this is a good price, let me just get it because I've been interested in it. But it definitely feels like a dice chucker, and lots of dice mitigation and figuring how you're going to manipulate your dice to get what you need to get. And you can do that through, there are a lot of ways to do that. There's your crew, there's upgrades, there's cards, there's lots of things that actually help you mitigate your dice. But it gets really hard. Like, there's definitely on this game I'm playing now, it's like you definitely have that impending sense of doom linging over your head through it.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, one bad dice roll and, you know. So I think you would get very frustrated. But I think
it.
If you have any interest like in the theme, regardless of that, I think that might power it through for you. So I think that's where it lies. It's like, are you willing to kind of get immersed in this world and deal with the dice chucking and that you don't have a ton of control over things to get the story? Or I think that's where what you have to figure out if you're going to get into this
right
game.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to because right now I'm like, oh, I'm big on solo games. Maybe I'll look into other solo games. But I'm curious to see when my hype for this current game dies down for Nemo's War to see if I'm still into that.
Do it. Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. That was Nemo's War. I think this is the second edition. I don't know. I'm not sure from Victory Point Games.
I was thinking that was GMT, but that is a different company.
Yes, they just have very...
That changes my impression of the game as well.
They do have similar bits, I think, so. Not the greatest, their bits. This one, though, is not like other Victory Point games I've seen. It's gorgeous. Like, the art, everything on it is really awesome. You have a little...
And it has a cool ship. Your ship painted?
No, are you crazy? No. It's not.
Oh, man. I was just looking at images online. Yeah. There's some really nice
It's really ships. Nice. That's a really nice Nautilus thing. Yeah.
Speaking of ships.
Yes.
Sean, my next game has a ship, too.
Ooh. What is it?
It's Selenia.
Ooh.
By Sebastian Desjardins. Art, Vincent Dutre.
Nice.
Gotta love the Vincent Dutre.
Yes.
Published by Pearl Games, one of my favorite publishers. Mm. And it was published in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Plays 1 to 4 players, has a current rating of 7.3 with 697 ratings, and has a weight of 2.25. So it's a lighter game.
Mm-hmm.
Quick and light.
Mm-hmm.
So this game is all about efficiency.
Oh, God.
You have 16 cards to get resources and essentially fill contracts to get the most points possible.
Mm.
To me, that's where the beauty of the game lies, is just how much can you squeak out with 16 turns.
Sorry, basically. Can I cut you off for a second?
Yeah.
That box is freaking stunning. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
I love Vincent Dutre. I mean, I really do.
Yeah. Wow, that box is amazing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Sorry. And the art's really great, too. Like this whole,
I just have to comment on that before I forget.
No, it's all good. So this game... The mechanisms, the way it works is you have a deck of cards. Each player has their own deck, and you always have a hand of 3 cards. And on your turn, you play a card out onto the board, and then you do the thing, basically. So your cards are almost like workers in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
The really neat thing about this the cards is that they have a hole in the middle. And so when you place them on the board, the hole reveals the resource or the action that you can do. And then the card has a number, so it's powered, and that tells you how many times you can do that action, like gain points or gain resources.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the cards have zeros on them. And when that happens, you trigger ship movement. So there's this really nice yellow ship that sits in the middle of the board. And when someone plays a zero card, you move the ship forward, and you actually take the back tile of the board. This is really hard to explain, but the board's made up of... how would you explain it? Almost like, well, just for simplicity's sake, I'll just call them rows of tiles, and then each row will have, like, 5 different action spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you take off the last row... And you flip it and you put it on the front. And the reason that matters is because some of the tiles are dark and some of the tiles are night, are light, representing day and night. And so certain resources are only available at night or more scarce at night, for example. And you can only fulfill night contracts at night and day contracts during the day. So what ends up happening is as you're playing this game, the board is shifting, and you go through night and day cycles, and the ship moves forward.
Okay.
It's very cool. if your card is on that last row of tiles, when it falls off and flips, basically, then each card has a bottom trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the cards that are on that row that fall off trigger. So you might get additional resources or additional points, for example.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool, too. And you're restricted in terms of how you can place your cards. So, you know, you have to place adjacent to one of your own or adjacent to the ship. So you can't just, like, go anywhere you want. So, you know, there's some interesting decisions about, you know, you want to be towards the back because you want to trigger your cards. And, yeah, it's a really neat little game. And then you do have a personal board that you slot these completed contracts into to get additional resources, and you are limited to, I think it's like 8 resources.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the game. Kind of hard to explain, actually, until you've kind of, you know, you see how it works. I've heard really, really good things about this, and because of the publisher and the artist and the designer, I picked it up immediately, and I ended up getting rid of it.
Hmm.
Yeah, which was kind of disappointing in a sense, because, you know, you have high hopes. This game is really nice. It is. I like the 16 actions. It's, you know, it's a great game for that light, short window, I guess. But it kind of just felt boring to me. Like, it was very much get resources, fill contracts. And I know it's about efficiency and, you know, trying to find the best way to do that. But ultimately, I still just found it somewhat bland. There is an advanced version where you can modify your abilities. I didn't end up playing it.
You were just so upset.
No, I sound upset.
You were just so upset with the game that you couldn't.
Oh, no, I actually didn't, because I was watching John Getz Games was talking about this, and he said that what they found was that the powers were just really OP.
Mm.
So he seemed pretty turned off by it, and that kind of just normally I. Yeah. Anyways, it was enough for me to say
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. Don't want to try it. Yeah. I don't know. I know. People really like this one, but for me, there was just not enough special there. Cool game, very fine, but yeah, ultimately a pass for me.
Art, and design can only take you so far, I guess.
Yeah, and I think this would be a kind of a cool gateway game. Like, I think, you know, or maybe gateway game plus, like, just, you know, introducing this idea of, like, collecting resources to do things. And, I mean, there's just some really cool pieces to the game, you know, the ship, the moving board, the holes in the cards. I mean, it's kind of neat, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Lots going for it, yep. But just ultimately, I don't know, just, okay.
That's okay. We don't have to let there are a lot of board games, Michelle.
I know, but you know, it's a surprise for me, because it's just one of those games where on paper, it was just like, it checked so many boxes for me. And then, yeah.
I think as a Canadian, you should spend the rest of this episode apologizing.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah,
for getting rid of it. Just the whole episode just randomly blurred out. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, so that's Selenia.
All right, my last pew-pew here I want to talk about is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, a gemstone mining game from USAopoly, designed by Sergio Haliban, Scott Morris, and Andrew Wolf. There's no art listed. It seems like captures from Snow White. That's probably why there's no art listed. And this is a re-implementation of Quartz from Passport Studio. This game was provided to us for the purposes of this review from USAopoly, so just FYI. So, have you ever played Quartz, Michelle?
No.
No.
Don't know anything about it.
Alright, well, this is a very mean game.
And that's why.
I was just gonna say. And Quartz, from what I heard, was very mean. I think this is a odd license to be putting on such a mean game.
Just gonna say,
however,
because I'm looking at the cover right now, yeah. And it's like a bunch of really happy little dwarfs.
Oh wait, no, let me give you to what your headcanon should tell you about this. So what you're doing in this game is basically the dwarves are going into the mine to Snow White, that horrible mistress, is sending the seven dwarves into the mine to get her gems. However, they risk their lives, because if you get 2 obsidian or black gems, your corpse, your body is carried out by the other dwarfs. You get knocked out. And then the ones who do get out, they have to give her these valuable gems for pie points. And they're actually called pie points. The points are pie points. So she's paying them with pie to risk their lives for 5 days a week.
So she's a genius.
That's pretty smart. And then it's just the dwarves are just, while they're in the gem, they're just constantly beating up on each other and doing horrible things to each other. Because they're trying to impress her more. That's what my head can. And anytime I played this game now, that's where it goes, is how horrible she is to these poor seven dwarves. What you're doing in this game, this is a push your luck game with some card play. You are doing, on your turn, you could do one of three things, in that you go into a bag full of gems, pull out a gem, you can play one of your cards, or you can leave the mine. Although Snow White doesn't like that. You're pushing your luck in that there are various colored gems, but there are black gems, which are obsidian. If you get two obsidian, you bust. And then your body gets carried out by the other dwarves. All the cards, there are a couple that aren't terribly mean, are just screwing with your opponent. It's like giving them an obsidian or having them mine for you, where they take out gems, and if one of the gems is an obsidian, they have to keep that gem. There's all sorts of other things where you make other people, the evil mistress makes other, the evil, is it Maleficent? Not Maleficent, the evil witch makes everyone put back a valuable gem, things like that. So they're all really, but there are counter cards. So there are blue cards, which are the ones that you play, and then there are counter cards, which are purple, which block the things that are happening. Although those never seem to come at the right time. So you're doing this for five rounds. At the end of each round, if you haven't busted, so if you bust, you don't get points. If you don't bust, you leave the mine on your own accord, then you get to trade the gems for buy points for her. And there's some neat things that the gems do, in that they're all worth a certain amount of points. Some are worth less than others. But in addition to that, there's various combinations of gems that you're trying to get. So let's say if you have three of one kind of gem, you can use that to multiply the value of another kind of gem. If you have four of a kind of one gem, you can use it to multiply two other kinds of gems. So that makes gems worth a lot more. There's things like if you have five different ones, it's worth an extra amount of points. If you have six different ones, that's worth an extra amount of points as well. And then each round, Snow White wants a specific combination of gems. So she might want two yellow and one green, and she'll give you 5 points if you're the first person to get out. You basically do that five times. That's the game. It's not heavy. It's super light. Feels like a push your luck game, but I've quite enjoyed it. I haven't played Quartz. I heard really good things about Quartz. I do really like push your luck games, as we've talked about on this show. The card play is fun as long as you're okay with the meanness. You have to be aware of how mean this game is. That's the number one thing. If you're not okay with mean card play and mean stuff happening, do not play this game. I played it with a couple people now who I did warn them in advance that it was a really mean game, and they were unimpressed with the level of meanness in it. And I was very clear. Like, I think you have to be very clear to anyone you play with that you're not going to be picked on. Hopefully that doesn't happen. But there's just, to win this game, you have to be mean. You have to do mean stuff. My wife has played this, who does not like mean stuff, but she said she wanted to play and was not doing anything mean and did not enjoy her experience. Like I said, a couple of other people have done that. If you're okay with that, though, this is a fun game that takes 45 minutes, and you can have lots of fun with the quote-unquote theme that really is just pasted on. But you can have fun with it. From what I understand, a couple of the people I have played with have noted that they have played Quartz. There are a couple of changes. Both said the changes were for the better. Okay. I haven't played it, so I don't really know. But they did enjoy. They did say they appreciated the changes in this. A couple other little rules, but yeah, that's it. If you're okay with, if you like push your luck games, and I guess quote unquote a Disney theme, and you are okay with the meanness, it's a very enjoyable game.
Is it though? No.
No, I mean, if you like it, right? It's like, it's not for everyone.
It's such a, you're right, it's a weird theme.
Yeah, I mean, USAopoly does IP games, right? Like, they tend to paste themes on a lot of stuff.
It's just so weird. Yeah. Like, the box is like, hey! Yeah. Like, so friendly and welcoming and
Yeah. See,
I'm just confused.
No, I'll be on like Villainous, right? A game I love. The Villainous theme would work really awesome.
Yeah,
right?
Where
you have
totally.
All the villains are competing against each other for this and doing horrible things to each other.
Yeah, that would be awesome, right, actually. So, that's a great theme for it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. That's Seven Dwarves, a Snow White and the Seven Dwarves gemstone mining game from USAopoly.
Nice. My last pew pew pew, 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 pew is On Tour.
On Tour. Da 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 da.
Do 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 do. This is published in 2019. I know. Rating of 7.4 on BGG with 595 ratings. 1 to 4 players in 20 minutes with a weight of 1.45. Designed by Chad Deshawn. Artist Anka Gavril. And the publisher is BoardGameTables.com, which I was not aware of.
Oh, for reals?
Yeah, like, that's what it says. Well, okay. BGG doesn't lie, no. Man. So this is a roll and write through and through.
I should play this.
Yeah, you would love this game, Sean. So yeah, this is a roll and write. The theme is that you're going on tour with a band, and each player board is a different genre of music, like country or jazz or whatever. And it's a map of the U.S. Each of the states is a circle. Mm-hmm. There are cards that come out, and you roll two large dice with numbers on them. And if it's like a 5 and a 9, you would have to write a 59 and a 95. Okay. And you have three cards that you can choose from, which show you different sections of the board, so like central or east or north or south, and so you have to pick two out of the three cards and write your two numbers in there. Each of the cards will also have a state. If you choose to write your number in the state depicted on the card, you get to circle it, and those are worth extra points at the end of the game. What you're doing at the end of the game, once all your circles are filled in, is you are drawing a tour line, basically, from state to state in ascending order. And you're trying to make that line as large as possible. And that's it. That's the game. You get a point for every state that you go on your tour with, and a point for every circled number that's on your tour. And, yeah, that's the game.
Cool.
So this was on Kickstarter, I think, and it is so, like, just over-the-top cliche Kickstarter. The box is massive, which is actually super unfortunate. I think it was a really bad design decision on their part. I think they made the box massive so that if you, like, you could add on extra player boards.
Gotcha.
And it would fit up to 12. But the problem with that is if you don't have 12, you have this massive box for what is essentially a very simple roll and write. Well, my Quix box is about the size of my pocket. And then the On Tour box is, like, the size of, like, the width of, like, Caverna.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, maybe not the best choice. Anyway, this game is pretty mediocre, I would say, for
and you are on a roll and write this week.
Yeah, I know. Hey. Yeah, it's pretty mediocre. The one of the biggest problems I would say with it is just the fact that there's really no mitigation. Like, there's nothing you can really do. A lot of roll and writes will have, you know, one-time effects or, you know, things that you can gain throughout the game that will help you do better in the future as things get more difficult. And this game doesn't have any of that. It's really just doing the best with what you got, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, I did notice, I played it, a handful of times, and I did notice that the more I played it, the better I got at it, because you can, you know, each state has multiple routes, so, you know, you try to kind of have a plan B and a plan C, but ultimately it's, you know, it's pretty basic in terms of roll and writes, and there are better roll and writes, and the fact that this box is so big, it's just, like, yeah. Not worth it. Oh, the other funny thing about, okay, so it's a Kickstarter, right? Mm-hmm. So the cards, for sure, this was a stretch goal. The cards are huge. And the boards are beautiful. Mm-hmm. They open up like a menu, like a two,
really?
Just a two-page menu. Yeah. And the outside of them is black, but the writing is also black, but it's like glossy, and they've got It's got like the jazz has like saxophones, and I mean it's a beautiful game. The dice are huge. Definitely another stretch goal. Like this game has stretch goal written all over it. It's pretty funny. Yeah, the pens that come with it are really great. Like they're dry erase. The boards are dry erase themselves, and the pens have like the erasers on them and stuff. Like it's a really really nice production. I love the art. There's not actually a lot of art on the cards because it's just like the U.S. with different areas highlighted. But there's I love the box design.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like lots of good things there. But yeah, the gameplay is pretty. Pretty basic.
Seems like my type of rolling, right?
Yeah. Just do whatever. So, yeah, that's on tour. I don't even know if it's hitting retail or if it's only available on Kickstarter. I haven't seen it in retail, I don't think.
Mm.
So, I don't know if it's... Yeah, I don't know availability-wise, but I don't think I've sold you anyone on the game either. So, I think we're okay.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, then... On that note, let's sell everyone on our BGG Thread Spotlight bit, Michelle.
All right, sounds great. Sean, what's a BGG Thread Spotlight?
That's where we look at one of the BGG threads and talk about it and give you some of our favorite posts from there and encourage you to go look there, and then we'll talk about the thread too.
Yeah. That's great.
This episode's thread is, what did board games teach you about yourself?
Deep.
Deep.
It's a deep thread. All right, Dirk Stoughton, the awesome original poster.
Just FYI.
It is a good name. He says, I like solo games. I actually like the experience of playing alone. Losing from a human opponent isn't a problem for me, but losing from randomness is tough. Watching videos about gaming is almost as interesting as playing myself. I need time to get my head around the rules. I thought I would be quicker. Board gamers and BGG are friendly and very helpful people. I thought my taste would move to more complex games, but funny enough, I like games that are simple and that are brought to the table quick.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. Losing from randomness for me is tough. I do not like watching videos as much as playing. And I like playing alone as well.
Maybe I will get to playing with myself too, Michelle.
All by myself. Yeah.
Reggie Kobayashi says, another awesome name. I am not nearly as smart or patient as I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always knew I wasn't very smart, but yeah, I agree. I'm not really as patient as I thought I was either.
Games do teach you that.
Yeah.
Obwayan. I want to say it's like Obi-Wan, but
yeah. Was taken.
Or maybe I misspelt it. Anyways, says, I'm a lot more cutthroat than I originally realized.
M.W. Chapel said that I'm all right losing.
And Scott McKay says that I'm losing all right.
Eric G. says, I suck at engine building.
Yeah, I kind of do too.
Yeah, me
Scott
too.
Osborne. Yeah? Yeah. Scott Osborne says, I value story and theme over gameplay. Oh, come on now.
Scott got a round of applause. Maybe I'll post on this thread and point out this episode to him. So he can hear.
His because you clap for him?
His round of applause.
Like, who are you? Go away.
I'll be there. Renee Peterson. I suck at teaching and explaining. Yep.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm an instructional designer, and I have an education degree, and I thought that would be a forte of mine.
Me too!
Yeah, I think maybe if I played the same game enough times to, like, know it, I could teach it well, but...
That's...
Yeah, I don't know. I thought I'd be better at that.
I think that's 100% it, Michelle, because that's exactly where I feel my thing is. Like, you know, Terraforming Mars, I could teach in my sleep and not look at a rule book and go over... any little detail and have it taught to you in 10 minutes and you wouldn't have any issues. But the games I have like that are few and far between because the games I played close to 50 times are non-existent.
Well, and I feel like I've gotten enough rules wrong that I no longer trust myself at all. Like if I say something, if someone asks me a question, I no longer trust myself. I'm like, I think it's this, but I'm going to check the rule book because... I just don't trust myself.
Fair.
All right, Chip Martin, this is like the sappiest part.
Good choice.
Yeah, he says, I can honestly say that board gaming has taught me to become a better father and husband. I, too, am new to the hobby about a year. In fact, gaming has opened up an amazing communication channel with my children and wife that was never there before. A year ago, we were all in our own little bubble with our own device. Introducing board games to the family has had an immediate impact on our family life in the most positive way. Yay! That's why we game, people, right there. I had a similar experience with my niece and nephew, actually.
Nice.
I was close with them, but once we started gaming together, it was just, yeah.
And I totally see that with my kids in game club. My daughter's a little too young, although she enjoys gaming. But with my kids in game club, that, like, you know, they're all, they come to game club. If they weren't coming to game club, they would be on their on the iPads or computers or stuff. And now they're interacting with each other and not trying to kill each other. So yay!
Yeah, it's great.
What are some of your things that you've learned?
I feel like this is so loaded. There's probably a ton because I feel like board gaming came into my life and just like swept me away. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's probably impacted me in so many ways. But the ones that I could immediately think of, I like immediate reward. Like, sometimes when I'm playing a game, I totally recognize that if I'm just a little bit more patient, like if I just save up a few more resources or save up a little bit more money, I'll do better. But I don't want to wait. I just want to, like, if I can buy that thing now, I'd rather just buy that thing.
Fair enough.
Which is, I mean, I think that reflects somewhat my like, I'm, you know, I can be pretty impatient and stuff. And I think that's why I like Feld games, because they're point salads. No matter what you do, big or small, you're getting something. So, yeah, immediate reward. I like it. What's one of yours?
Let's see. I like shiny things.
Shiny as in?
Like pretty and, like, you know, bits. Like this podcast, for instance, we talk about it all the time, but the art and the pieces, and I think in the shiny bits thing is also the, you know, the theme. I like theme. I like stuff that immerses me. Which I didn't. I when I first started playing games, especially since Dominion was like my gateway game, which there's no theme and there's really no shiny or anything in it. I thought it would be all about, you know, the mechanisms and the strategy, but that is not the case.
Yeah, mine kind of switched to the opposite of that. Like when I started, a lot of stories and that sort of thing, lots of thematic games, and kind of moved away from it. It's interesting. I try to explain to people, like, when I'm trying to explain the hobby and I talk about, like, the art and stuff, because I'm like, they're works of art. Like, they really, really are. And people are like, yeah, they're, like, imagining paper money and Monopoly, you know what I mean? And it's so hard to explain, but it's just, yeah, they are. They're works of art. They're amazing. All right, my next one is true passion is major absorption. So what I mean by this is I'm a musician. I've been a musician for a very long time. I have a degree in music, so I studied and played the saxophone quite seriously for quite some time. Mm-hmm. But I was never one of those saxophonists that, like, knew every, like, type of mouthpiece and every piece of music, you know, and I was like, oh, like, how do they know all this, you know? And then when I got into board gaming, I understood it. And it was just this idea that, like, you're just so passionate that you're just a sponge and you just soak everything up and everything is interesting, you know, and, like, the amount of designers I learned and mechanisms I learned, like, all these things that I just picked up when I was new to the hobby. And the amount I would remember was phenomenal to me. Like, I was kind of blown away. And I just realized this is what passion looks like. This is what a true passion. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm incredibly passionate about music. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, board games more, I guess. Like, I was absorbed into the world into the world of board games. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, this is what that true passion looks like. So experiencing that for the first time was pretty cool.
Nice. My other one is I have here, I actually gasp like people. I always used to like to say that people annoy me. that I just get annoyed really easily by things and things people do. But the reason I like, I think I like board games so much is not the competitive aspect. It's not the competition of it. It's the social interaction I have with people. And I think that harkens back a lot to kind of my previous days as a Magic gamer. When I think about it, I was a pretty, I was a pretty good Magic player. I was like a nationally ranked Magic player. But I think what really got me is as all the people I knew were transitioning to like Magic Online and playing Magic Online and stuff, I never went that way because I liked having that interaction with people, even though that interaction with the Magic community is nowhere near as good and fruitful as the board game community. But it's that social interaction. And it's part of the reason I never really gravitated towards solo games really until lately, when it's become really hard for me to actually do gaming between a toddler and work. That's the only way I could get gaming in someday a lot of times is by doing that. I like having the social aspect. I like seeing people. I actually gasp, it's horrible to say, look forward to when I get to see you and play games with you and, you know, our bitsters who listen and meeting new people. You know, some of my best friends now are people I met through board games, or people who weren't necessarily board gamers, but now they're board gamers through me. So it's really had a big impact on my social circle and the way I socialize.
Yes, me as well. And as much as I say, you know, I'd rather the game. The other day, I kind of did have a bit of an epiphany at Path of Play Day. Because I was like, I wouldn't want to play a game with terrible people. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it is a lot about the people around the table with you, and we're lucky to be in a city with a very great community.
We are.
Yeah. Well, my last one that I thought of immediately was that there's a realization that I'm just a giant child who likes toys, especially if they're made out of wood. Like, I always talk about like the tactile aspect of gaming and all how much I like that. And, you know, if I see a game with like big bits, I'm like, ooh, you know, and I'm just realizing, yeah, I'm kind of a giant child. Like, I really just love, they're my toys.
Mm, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a realization for me. Who knew?
I think I'm like that too. Now, as I look around here, you know, before I got into board gamings, I would like collect like giant omnibus graphic novels, comics. I don't do that anymore. I used to like collect pop figures. Like, I used to have pop figures everywhere. I don't do that anymore, right? Those were kind of my quote unquote toys before. Yeah, now it's like the same thing. It's like it's board games or the toys. So my last one is just, I like the research aspect of board gaming. I had changed this. I had something really sappy before, and I didn't want to get into it because I was worried I would cry. So I did start talking about it.
Okay.
But we'll talk about it on another episode. But the research that, like, oh, like, you know, and I do like watching videos. Like, watching videos, reading about a game, going on the social medias, going on BGG, just thinking, like, that whole absorption into it. And I think that harkens back. I don't know if I mentioned this on the show or told you. I love, love planning trips. You know, if there was a way to make a living being an actual, what are those people called? Why can't I think of those people? You know, where you go and they...
Travel agent.
Right? Like, if there was a way to have a good living doing that, I would probably do that. And I feel like in my later years, I probably will do that because I love doing that. Like, I get such a thrill. I almost have, like, just a big letdown. Like, when we finally go on a trip, I've done, like, all this work and all this reading and all this research. Then we go on a trip. I'm like, ugh.
Okay, well, this is good to know because you're going to be planning my next holiday.
I plan holidays for lots of people, and I'm happy to do it for free.
All right, good to know.
And it's the same thing with, like, games. Like, I love having that, like, going into it. Like, I feel like, and it's probably a placebo thing almost, too. Like, if I buy a game based on, like, just not knowing anything about it or just the designer or something, I feel like I never like it as much as, like, when I do the research. And, like, I feel like I'm more intimately tied to it when I go through this whole spiel to learn a game. So I like doing that.
Yes, I do as well. I used to do it a lot more before we had my daughter Chloe. Yeah. Like, I remember spending a good chunk of Saturday mornings just reading everything, but I just don't do it as much anymore.
Yeah, I do most of my research on the toy. I mean, you know, when I'm doing stuff.
Yeah, fair enough. Cool. Well, those were good. I'm sure there's many more. Yeah, it was an interesting thing to think about. That's a good one.
Yeah, let us know. Bitsers, hit us up on social media. Yeah. Let us know on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. What did board games teach you about yourself? And be as funny or as serious or as heartfelt as you want.
Yes, please do. We're at All the Bits Pod.
Wherever you find your social media.
Yes.
I'm hungry, Michelle.
Me too. Do you know what I would like?
Some Hot Pockets.
Nope. A Hot Topic.
All right. So this is our bit where we just talk about something. Something that might be pressing in the board game world or just questions. I wanted to highlight the awesome photos that Michelle takes for our Hot Topic. Generally, you could tell who's taken the photo, who posts a photo on all the bits on any of our social media accounts, because mine are usually blurry and because my hands shake so much, but Michelle's are usually really pretty and awesome. So I want to really highlight that, because I think, like, there are some professional photo takers out there, and I feel like Michelle's quality is probably better than a lot of them. That's how gorgeous I think they are. So I want to ask Michelle some questions about her photo taking. Are you ready?
I guess so.
So, hey, Michelle.
Yeah.
What makes a good board game photo, in your opinion?
I think the best ones are the ones that are unique and surprising. So something that you wouldn't have expected, a vantage point, or, you know, there's one guy, I think it's Board Game Shots, and they do like bits falling and, you know, capturing different moments. For me, I like color. So like good contrast and color and a good angle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, although I feel like I take all my photos from the same angle, so...
Hey, whatever works.
And I'm no expert here, by the way.
Yeah.
And I don't think I am, just to, like, put that out there. This is being very Canadian of me.
No, and there are... I mean, besides you, of course, Michelle. My favorite board game photographer... And I don't know if he's so much... I guess he is, because he does his Board Game Eric... I love his pictures. They're usually like fanned out, really showing all the components and stuff. They're more of kind of like a, you know, professional type thing. But I just love his use of how he does things. But I think of like action photos or stuff for games. I think yours are some of the best.
That's very kind
of you. So what are you may have mentioned, touched on this in your kind of what makes a good photo. What are your goals when you're taking a picture?
Just make it look good. Honestly, I mean, I don't put much thought into it. I just turn the camera on and I just start. I mean, if I'm in the middle of a game with like a few people, I usually just try to take a quick photo or quick few shots and just, you know, go quickly. But if I have a bit more time, I just keep moving my phone around until I see something that I like. Usually.
Nice.
Yeah. And I mean, it's really just until I see something that I think, oh, that's pretty. Then I won't take a photo.
So you recently had that Tiny Towns one with like, yeah. The shadows and stuff. Like how you do that?
Well, so one of my favorite times of day, there's like during the spring, summer, the sun sets and the sun just like shines right into my gaming space and creates these gorgeous shadows with all my bits.
So it's all natural.
Yeah, I don't play with lighting. I wish I could. I wish I knew more about lighting. Like, photography's actually been something I've always been interested in, but I know it's, like, a time-consuming and expensive hobby, so I've somewhat stayed away from it. The Tiny Towns was just, there were, like, really good shadows, and I was like, oh, that would look cool. So I just put out the buildings and took a shot.
That makes sense, because I feel like you often have really good shadows in a lot of your pictures.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love playing on days like that when it's just It's perfect.
Nice.
Yes.
It's the me version. It's the me version of a board game. Got it. Perfect. Okay. Next. So I guess you described this. You use your phone, right, to take the pictures?
Yeah, I just use my, yeah. Like, I bought, when my daughter was born, I upgraded my phone to have, like, a pretty decent camera, although it's probably outdated now. And I play a little bit with filters, like, on Instagram. Yeah. I kind of go through them and pick the one that I like the most. I think I really like saturated colors. Like, I probably, some people I would think wouldn't like what I end up going with because it's very like bright and saturated, but that's what pleases me, so that's what gets posted.
Fair.
Yep.
All right, my last question here, and if there's anything you want to add after, please feel free. A dream game that you haven't photographed yet that you would like to photograph. Can you think of anything?
Yeah, I think so. I finally picked up that Super Meeple version of Tikal.
I feel like I knew that's what you were going to say.
Well, I did take a photo of that, but there's the Mexica I've never purchased it because I think it's a bit too mean for my tastes. But I really, really, really love those bits. Like that whole series, the Mask series. So yeah, I would like to photograph that.
Cool.
That would be great.
Cool. Anything else you want to say?
I wish I could play more with lighting and like avoid glare. That's my biggest enemy is glare. Because as soon as it's dark and the lights are on, it's like, yeah.
See, I don't care.
No, you don't.
I don't care about glare or anything.
No, you really don't.
My hands, so this is something that runs in my family. My hands, anytime I'm like doing anything with my hands, they tend to shake a lot. So I have kind of a bit of a tremor, especially when I'm taking pictures, which is why I'm doing this. The other day I was like, I was for work binding a book that should only take like a normal person like 15 minutes to put the coil through. It took me like 2 hours to do.
Oh, no.
I can't get my hands because they shake so much when I'm doing something in little thing. So yeah.
And you play dexterity games.
Sorry?
And you play dexterity
games. I do. I love dexterity games. I'm
That's
awful
impressive,
at them.
Sean. That's impressive. Yeah. Tokyo Highway, I think, would be the worst for that. That game stresses me out.
Thankfully.
It's so
I think
tiny.
We played that. Thankfully, everyone else made things collapse before I could.
Yeah, that would be me. I killed everyone.
Yeah.
If I'm going down, you're all coming down with me.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. You ready for some baseball?
I was going to make a baseball sound, but I went, pew. That just,
next
nope.
up. Oh, wait. No, that's, batter up something.
Yep. Next up. This is a bit where we talk about games that we're looking forward to playing or purchasing or are just generally excited about that are coming in the future.
Can I start?
The future.
Can I start?
Yeah.
Because this is kind of, it ties into the previous one because I need you to just take pictures of this because my pictures don't do this game justice with how beautiful and gorgeous it is. That is, I finally got, after 2.5 years, Quad Heroes. It finally came in off Kickstarter.
What a beautiful game. Yes. I knew nothing about this, and when you sent me a picture of those bits, it was just like...
I'll cheat a little bit, because I have played Quad Heroes, the tutorial missions. I haven't played it competitively yet. Designed by, from Wonderment Games Design and Art by Ryan Iller, or Lehrer. I think you would love this game, Michelle, because it really does feel like a like classic platforming game. I like to almost think it feels like a platforming video game mixed with the video game Frogger, because you're really just trying to get from like the bottom of the map to like another portion of the map. But it does have that feeling that it feels very much almost like Kirby would be a good one, except you're not eating everything and being a cannibal. Other than that, but yeah, it really does feel like that. So I'm so looking forward to playing it. It comes with, obviously, the minis are gorgeous. We'll be talking about the minis in the thing. It's the first game that I've had where I'm like, oh my God, I really want to paint this. Especially since a lot of the characters, if you'll notice, Michelle, are very pink and bright colors.
I didn't notice that.
Well, they're the art of the characters. I'm gonna
look this up.
Yeah. On their thing, they say it's a combination of Super Smash Brothers, Mario Kart, and Legend of Zelda. I don't know if I agree with that. I could see the Legend of Zelda.
Oh, but those are all amazing.
I totally, And I think, so part of that is what's neat is there's a scenario book that has all kinds of things. There's like races, there's like there's like capture the flag, there's like, there are crystals like Zelda that you have to collect. You have to go around collecting. So that video, it feels like a love letter to platforming. I think platforming video games, really, but video games in general, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like that. Yeah.
So I am desperate to kind of play with more than myself with this. I've done the tutorial missions. Feels really simple to do. There is some fiddliness and a lot of kind of little minor rules that I'm hoping don't hinder the gameplay once I play it. But you can play co-op, you can play one versus all, you can play solo, you can play competitive. There are a whole bunch of different. There's also, it just came out, a thing where you can create your own scenarios for it using the tiles that are with the game. So I'm expecting you're going to see people creating ones. I'm hoping the community is strong enough after all this that people create ones based on some of these classic video games. They're like actual level recreations of them. I'm hoping to see that. It's my goal.
Yeah, this looks pretty cool. I knew nothing about it until you mentioned it and sent me that photo, and I was kind of blown away.
Yeah, and this was a game, I'll be honest, I tried to unback this game because it was after I backed it and I was too late because I was having second thoughts. But now that I'm kind of going through and learning it and stuff, I'm so excited I have it.
Will you play this game with me?
I will play it with you. Yes, I will.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I really want to try it. It looks, yeah. And you definitely need to paint your dudes. Yes. Like, now that I see some of the painted ones, it's like,
and they have a really nice wash on them, so the definition is there. You can really, because they're all really individual. And then what's nice, what I appreciate, even though this game is very highly produced, is that you get two of each dude. One is for on the board, but because the board involves so much manipulation, because you're rolling your square minis onto different sides, you get one that you can kind of practice with and fiddle with, which is a nice touch, I think. You don't have to take your guy off the board or mess around with him.
Amazing. It looks so cute. I definitely want to give it a go.
For sure.
And you definitely have to, the little pink guy you have to
paint. I know, that's like the guy that's
so cute.
Yeah, that's like the guy that really, the hot pink guy, or dude, or girl.
Very cool. Yeah, and there's like a Groot character too. Oh man, this looks super, super fun. I feel like the gameplay could be a complete flop, but it sounds good.
Put those guys around. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to playing that one with you.
For sure.
My next up is, De Tavernen im Tiefental, which is... the latest Wolfgang Warsch. Yes, and it's currently only in German, but there are English rules. I don't remember what publisher picked this up. Do you?
I don't.
For English?
No, but I will look while you're talking.
I can't remember. So Schmidt Spiel has this one right now, and I did see that. Pardon me?
It's a deck builder.
Oh, is it?
So.
Oh yeah, deck. Deck pool building, dice rolling. There's something about this theme that just gets me super excited. I do not know why. The art looks really engrossing. Like, I know why. I think Grand Austria Hotel has this as well. And Tudor. I really like when the boards and where you put things are like parallel to what they would be in reality. I don't know how to explain it. Like in Tudor, for example, the worker placement spots are tables and you put your dudes on the chairs and it just looks good. I don't know. So Im Tiefental has that look to it.
Nice. And this, it will be coming out for North Star Games in
North Star.
It'll be out by Q4. Bruce from North Star Games says, Q4 2019. They are currently working on localization and the title as we speak.
Beautiful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the English is the Tavern of the Deep Valley, but I did see, I actually voted on a poll because they were looking at different names for the English version. I don't know a ton about it. There's dice, and there's dice drafting, and it's a Euro. It says you need to choose the dice and develop your personal deck of cards as profitably as possible. Okay, there's a bunch of different modules. Yep. There's different modules, and it looks it's a weight of 2.67, so you know, light, heavy, medium, light. I actually have this coming tomorrow.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, because it's the only thing that needs English translation is the rule book, and there is a rule book, so I've printed it, and I have it coming tomorrow. So I'm just really excited about it. It looks cool. It's dice. It's Euro-y. Nope, Bliss had it. Good old Bosco at Board Game Bliss, our show sponsor. Nice. There's a reason he's our show sponsor.
He has all these German games.
He has all these wonderful games. He brings everything in. So, yeah.
Nice.
So, pretty excited about this one.
I'm excited, too. Will you play that with me?
Yeah, we should have a game night, man. Yeah. So, that's one more time for the fans. Die Tavernen im Teufenthal. Yeah.
You get a clap, too.
Thank you.
You get a
clap. Thank you.
All right, my next up is my two hole. We are in May, so that means con season is coming up, and I'm going to be going to Gen Con for sure.
Yay!
And still trying to officially confirm and make Origins work, but that'll be like a last minute thing if it does, because it'll be just completely dependent on me having the time to do it. But All the Bits will definitely be at Gen Con and hopefully be at Origins. And yeah, that'll probably be it for this year. But we're going to have lots of meetups and bathrooms.
That's right. Without me.
Without Michelle.
I'll be there in spirit.
Without Michelle as usual. Because Michelle doesn't
I'll
like
just
it.
Just be playing games at home alone.
Yes.
Wow.
But we'll give more details as we get closer. And let you know but what we'll be up to, and if there's anything you want us to be up to at those cons. So that's my next up. No details really right now. So
that's exciting though. Gen Con again.
Yes,
I'm excited for
I'm
you.
I'm looking forward to it. I did not dislike Gen Con as much as most people say. So I also don't mind large throngs of people. So
No thanks.
I could deal with it.
Ugh. My next up is actually not something I'm super excited about, but I just thought it was worth mentioning. So there's a game called Coffee Roaster, which is a solo game that's been fairly popular, but difficult and expensive to find. And apparently DLP Games picked it up, and they're releasing a new edition in May or June. So pretty quick here.
Nice.
Yeah. And apparently the gameplay is the same, but they've changed the layout of the game and some of the illustrations. So, yeah, I just thought it was worth mentioning because I know some people are interested in it, and it's been hard to find. So,
well,
there you go,
given,
Coffee Roaster coming to.
Maybe I'll be interested,
to,
given my new affinity for whatchamacallit, for solo games.
Yeah, you might like it. It's like a bag builder.
Yeah.
And then push your luck.
Oh,
so,
geez.
Yeah, you might like
maybe
it, actually.
Michelle, maybe I will.
I think you should. I think you should pick it up. No. I don't love the new art.
But you really like
art.
That.
The old art was, like, super colorful.
You've talked about that on the show, right?
I have talked about it. I did sell my copy,
though. You did? You got all coffeed out.
It was on my 10x10, and I'm like, I'm determined to like this game, and then I just gave up on it. Everybody loves it, but I just didn't like it. It was okay. I shouldn't say I didn't like it. It was okay.
Gotcha.
But I'm okay to not play it again.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
That's it. That's all we got
that's
for
it.
Episode 41.
We did a thing.
We did a thing, and the thing, and now we're going to do a thing, and I'm probably just going to go to sleep.
Yeah,
that sounds nice. Because it's past my bedtime and I'm old.
All right, well, before we close out the show and Sean goes to bed, we just want to say thanks again to all of our amazing listeners and our show sponsor, Board Game Bliss, a store where you really can find an amazing selection of games, including Typhon. No, I don't have it open anymore. I don't remember. amazing selection of games from around the world, bringing joy to you and your loved ones. The next time you are playing with someone who has AP, may we suggest you use that time to click the subscribe button and leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks again.
Oh, hey. Bye. Hey.
Oh, hey. Hey.
Hey. Hey. Michelle, keep talking for 1 minute. Like, just...
Blah, blah, blah.
No, I don't know. Tell people how awesome they are, or like...
You are so awesome. You are all just so amazing. I have no idea what's happening right now.
Yeah, just keep...
I feel like Sean has some terrible joke that he's been waiting to do. Maybe a baseball sound effect.
Sports. Sports.
We do love our sports.
We do. We are huge.
Here on All the Bits.
Huge sport fans here. The sport ball fans. I should have had it open before. You had mentioned our iTunes, leaving iTunes. We got an awesome review from someone on iTunes.
Oh, we did.
We did, from Canada Carl. Is that person related to you?
A.K.A. my mom.
Is
no,
it? I don't know. I just make sure when we get these reviews, I want to make sure that they're not related to people. Canada Carl says, so many board game podcasts have such a similar format, almost as if their theme is pasted on. All the Bits stands out with such a playful take on the traditional format. In a world with computer-generated everything, some old-school silly sound effects can't help but make you smile and laugh. Great banter in a good bite-sized chunks. Bite-sized, bit-sized chunks? Question mark, question mark, question mark? Grinning
Whoa.
Face?
Oh. Mind blown.
Yeah. So,
bit-sized.
Thank you, Canada Carl. We appreciate that 5-star review on iTunes.
Very much so. I'm glad there's someone else. There's one other person in this world that appreciates our sound
Besides
effects.
Your mom and my
Because
mom.
They really are the best.
I don't think my mom listens anymore. But
I don't know if my mom still listens. If she does, hey, mom.
Hi, Michelle's mom.
She really didn't like it when she listened. Do you talk about board games for so long?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah. All right, on that note, now we could say bye. Bye.
Bye.